Hey everybody, what you are about to listen to is an episode of Am I Dying? Here at Offscript, we've taken the Am I Dying show, put a twist on it, and created the new Is It Serious podcast with Dr. Mark Lewis and Dr. Jean-Luc Neptune. Think of it this way. The Am I Dying docs discuss lots of symptoms, while the Is It Serious docs answer lots of questions. And all of the episodes are here on this feed for your listening pleasure. For new episodes, don't forget to subscribe, and thanks for listening.
Shouldn't that sound more depressing? You're like that person, you know, like in those commercials. Do you know in those commercials where the person's picking up their catheter and they're like smiling? Like who wears a catheter? It's like going to answer the door smiling.
This is the first time I've ever read these words out loud. I know,
but I'm like, why don't they have realistic commercials?
Hey everyone, it's Dr. Chris Kelly.
And I'm Dr. Mark Eisenberg.
And we are here to answer the age-old question, am I dying? Okay, everyone, welcome to the show today. We are going to be talking about a topic that occupies a disproportionate amount of our time and energy as cardiologists, and that is heart attacks. What is a heart attack? How do you know when you're having one? When people say it's serious as a heart attack, is it really that serious? And most importantly, will we be able to come up with any jokes about heart attacks on the fly? That I'm very pessimistic about.
Yeah, Martin? Well, I think most people think, including me, how many times this month can I go to McDonald's or Burger King before I'm at risk for a heart attack?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Do we know the answer for that, by the way?
How many times are you up to?
Wasn't there a McDonald's movie where someone just ate McDonald's every day for like 2 months?
Supersize Me.
Yeah, I never saw it. Did you?
I did. I actually saw it in theaters, believe it or not. But, you know, it's funny.
Someone has a really active social life.
I saw it on a date. Bad choice for a date, by the way. You don't really feel too frisky after watching a guy shove Big Macs and fries into his face for 2 hours.
Plus, I don't think you want the title Supersize.
You do feel hungry, though, after watching that. And I actually did look pretty thin compared to the guy who had been eating all the McDonald's. But yeah, it's interesting. I think most people have this conception that they're going to have a heart attack like right after eating a steak or after eating like deep fried whatever, Oreos or sticks of butter at the state fair. It's actually not when it usually happens. We can talk about when it usually happens, but certainly that's going to increase your chance of a heart attack. So before we go any further, maybe we should just hit the basics here and talk about what exactly a heart attack is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is a heart attack? So we all have hearts with four chambers, and our hearts...
Most of us. Most of us. I've heard what your girlfriends say about you.
Anyway, so we all have hearts with four chambers, and we need the heart itself needs blood. So the heart has a bunch of arteries on top of the heart that supply the heart with actual blood. And what happens during a heart attack usually is one of the arteries that supplies the heart with blood actually gets a clot in it. There's a plaque, and the plaque ruptures, and a clot forms on top of it, and it decreases the amount of blood supply to that area of the heart, and that basically makes that part of the heart not having enough oxygen.
So this is an interesting thing, because I think when non-medical people hear about heart attacks, it's confusing because, right, the heart is full of blood all the time.
Yeah.
There's nothing but blood in the heart all the time. And throughout the heart attack, there's blood in the heart. But the key insight is that the heart is a muscle, and that muscle needs its own blood supply. And yeah, the blood inside of the heart is not doing anything for it.
Yeah.
That's just the work. The arteries on top of it, which are called the coronary arteries, break off into tiny little capillaries that, you know, fill up those muscles and supply it with blood. And
yeah,
and that's where the issue lies. So when we talk about part of the heart not getting blood, what we mean is an artery on the surface of the heart not supplying blood to the muscle on that part of the heart, not that there's any obstruction to flow within the heart, which, you know,
exactly,
there isn't.
Exactly. And these arteries on top of the heart, imagine sort of pipes. So what are plaques? So yes, if you eat at McDonald's and stuff, over time you get plaques in these pipes. So imagine like rust in the pipes or sort of dirt and junk that sticks to the walls of these pipes. That's what a plaque is. Over time, if you have bad, you know, high blood pressure or sugar problems and you eat very badly, plaques form on the walls. They sort of get stuck on the walls of these coronary arteries, which again, you can see as pipes leading the blood to the heart. And these plaques sort of can rupture. And when they rupture, they open up and they expose the underlying cholesterol and stuff in the plaque to the platelets in the blood, and it causes this big clot. It goes boom. And basically, it can just sort of close off that blood supply to that whole area.
Your analogy reminds me of a recent story where my wife and I, this is funny, I probably shouldn't even confess this as a cardiologist. My wife and I got a deep fryer to occasionally make French fries or onion rings when we're in the mood for that kind of thing. And the first time that we ever used the deep fryer, I was trying to figure out what to do with some of the grease that was still stuck in there. And Leah, my wife, was like, I don't think you should pour that down the drain. I think you should put it in the garbage. And I was like, well, I don't want to have oil all over our garbage. I think it's fine down the drain. She's like, I don't think you're right. And I said, I know I am. And I poured all this oil down the drain. And she's like, okay. And then the next day, I'm at work, and she sends me a picture without any caption of a truck parked across the street from our house with a huge sign on the side of it that says don't pour grease down the drain, and they're pumping our pipes under the street.
So funny.
So this story works on multiple levels, because number one, we were probably forming plaques in our own hearts by eating those French fries, and number two, seriously gummed up the works in the Raleigh plumbing system.
Yeah, so you know, I'm sure your neighbors don't like you for multiple reasons.
But yes, this is just one.
I think that pink flamingo you have on your front lawn probably pisses off a few too.
I think it's the nightly fireworks display actually that really gets us into some trouble.
Okay, so we talked about what is a heart attack, right? So why don't we talk about what are the symptoms of a heart attack?
Okay, but before we go there, I think this is just like one of the really key insights that you mentioned, and I want to make sure we highlight it, that it's the bad diet, the obesity, diabetes, smoking, high blood pressure, all that bad stuff that forms the plaques over the years. And that's like setting a fuse, honestly, in your heart.
Exactly.
You know, that steak that you eat is probably not going to do you any short-term harm. Maybe you'll get some reflux, but it contributes to cholesterol, which over the years is laying down plaque in your artery. And that plaque is not stable like a regular artery wall. It can crack open, as Mark said, and then a clot forms on top of it. And that's when you're really in trouble.
Yeah. So again, there's different types of heart attacks, but this coronary artery blockages is the most common type. The other types of heart attacks are pretty, pretty rare.
Yeah. That's like 99% is what we're talking about.
Yeah. The other type are like spasm or, you know, something to do with an infection and inflammation. So again, the most common, and that's what we're pretty much going to concentrate on today, is the plaque rupture, the heart attack with the coronary arteries being blocked. And again, the coronary arteries are the arteries on top of the heart that supply your heart with blood so it could pump appropriately.
So the question that everyone I'm sure is waiting for, what does it feel like to have this, and how do you know if you have it?
Yeah.
So the classic symptom of a heart attack, of course, is chest pain. And the chest pain is usually described by people as like a pressure or a tightness in their chest, someone sitting on their chest or squeezing their chest.
An elephant sitting on their chest or their chest being squeezed. And, you know, they do. I guess podcasts, people can't see us right now, right?
Thank God.
That's our biggest joke. We've been told for years we both have faces for podcasts.
Speak for yourself.
I don't know how to describe this, but when people sit in your office saying they've been having some chest pain, they sort of like this squeezing thing with their hand, right? Where their hand sort of like closes and turns at the same time.
And actually, a lot of people will painstakingly, that's really the wrong word. A lot of people will go out of their way to say that it's actually not pain. It's just a discomfort or a weird sensation.
Exactly. You know, it's funny, actually, not to get to a story, but I went on with this guy for a while saying, do you have chest pain? No. Do you have this? No. Do you have this? That? And, you know, everything's fine. We're walking out. He's like, you know, I didn't tell you I have some discomfort in my chest. I'm like, back in the room, sir. Yeah, it's funny. But when we say chest pain, we're usually making pain synonymous with discomfort or any type of symptom you have in the chest.
Right. Okay. So it's this chest heaviness, pressure, squeezing, tightness. Usually it will get worse when you exert yourself. So anything that increases your heart rate, if you think about it, is going to make the problem worse, because the underlying issue is that the heart muscle isn't getting enough blood.
Yeah.
So if you're you know, walking around, walking upstairs, or feeling stressed, anything that gets your heart rate up is going to make the problem even worse, because when the heart beats faster, it needs more oxygen-rich blood, which it cannot get. Mm-hmm. So classically, that is going to make things worse. Yeah. Things that usually do not make the pain from a heart attack worse include deep breathing, moving your arms and body around, or pushing on the area. If those things make the pain worse, that makes it much less likely that it's a heart attack.
Wait, but we also want to say, even though if you have discomfort in your chest, it could also radiate places. It could radiate to your back. It could radiate to your neck or your jawline, even to your stomach or to one of the arms. So again, when he's saying it doesn't get worse when you move your arm, it doesn't mean you're not feeling any pain in your arm or your neck when you're not moving. That's one thing. And the other thing is, you know, what happens is if you keep feeling, and yes, normally at first, it shouldn't get worse when you touch it. But if you keep touching your chest to see if after a while, it might get hurt when you touch it because you've been bruising the area, which has nothing to do with.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning here, if people are wondering, the reason that you can kind of feel it all over the place and not just in one focal spot is because it's not, unlike the nerves on your skin, the nerves inside your body don't localize really that well to parts of your body. So you can feel it kind of all over. It's not like always right in the area of your heart. It can just be all over your chest, arms, neck, because those nerves aren't that specific. In contrast, if it's really specific to one exact spot on your chest, and you know, pushing on it makes it worse, that's much more likely to be a muscular issue
or something else. So again, so discomfort in your chest that usually starts and doesn't go away can get worse when you're moving around. It could radiate to your neck, your arms, your back. You could feel short of breath with it, which is also a very bad sign. Some people experiencing some nausea, vomiting, sweatiness. They can get cold and clammy also. And sometimes you could just get very dizzy and lightheaded. So again, the more symptoms you have at the same time, the more likely it is something like a heart attack or something very serious, like a lung clot.
Something we should point out here is that although chest pain is the classic major symptom of a heart attack, actually a lot of people have heart attacks without any chest pain. And sometimes all you get is just sudden shortness of breath, feeling really tired. Sometimes it's nausea and just sort of general uneasiness and sweatiness. So, you know, if you have risk factors for heart disease, you know, you're on the older side, you have a history of diabetes, smoking, cholesterol, and you just have this sudden change that can't be explained, it's always good to consider the possibility of a heart attack, because they can sometimes cause these very strange atypical symptoms. Again, sometimes no chest pain at all.
Yeah. So anyway, we have to take a break right now, but when we come back, we're also going to talk about how long do you wait before you call 911?
Not long. Stay tuned.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, we're back. In this episode, we are talking about heart attacks 101 and 202 and 303 for that matter. Pretty much everything that you need to know about heart attacks. In the first half of the episode, we talked about what exactly a heart attack is, highlighted the fact that it relates to the heart muscle not getting enough blood through the coronary arteries. We talked about how a plaque in those arteries usually cracks open, causes a blood clot to form and completely block that artery off. And then we talked about the major symptoms, which include chest pain in most but not all cases, as well as shortness of breath, lightheadedness, fatigue. Sometimes you feel your heart racing, nausea, vomiting, lots of different symptoms. But bottom line, if you're somebody who's at risk of having a heart attack and you have the sudden onset of any of those, it's something that you should definitely think about. So Mark,
wait a second. You're just saying fatigue. What does that mean to people? I mean, they're not just going to all of a sudden in the middle of, you know, workday feel fatigue. What does that mean?
To me, it means if there's a sudden major change in how you feel. not just that you're creeping on to 3 o'clock and you need your coffee or you're feeling a little run down by work, but I think that if you, over the course of a few minutes, go from feeling okay to feeling really uneasy, weak,
sweaty
and nauseous, just clammy, that's a bad sign.
Or a racing heart, yeah.
Okay, Mark, so you provocatively asked how long a person should wait before calling for an ambulance. I'd love to know your answer to that.
Well, you know, as they always say, it's like time is money in the business world. You know, time is muscle in the heart world. So again, the longer you wait to get any care, the more likely you're going to have a bigger heart attack that's more extensive and affecting more of the muscle.
This is not something that you want to just try to sleep off.
No.
The sooner, it's like a stroke. The sooner you get treated, the better you're going
to
do.
Yeah. I mean, ideally in the first 10 to 20 minutes, you know, you should be chewing on an aspirin, right? Take a full aspirin, which is 325. If you don't have if you don't have allergies to aspirin, it is. If you have an allergy to aspirin, do not take an aspirin. But anyway, but you should be chewing on 325 milligrams of aspirin. Which is 4 baby aspirin or 1 full aspirin, and calling 911.
Yeah.
You know, if you really think you're having a heart attack, don't sit there and say, does anyone have an Apple Watch? Let me take my EKG, you know?
With that being said, I think it's okay to wait a minute or two and just gas or something that's passing. But if you're feeling off and it's lasting more than a couple minutes, you should not wait. And as Mark says, take the aspirin and call for an ambulance. Because it happens all the time that people come in and they're not having a heart attack and they're completely fine. But it also happens all the time that they are. And this is a very high stakes thing. And if, you know, it's not the end of the world if you go in and you turn out you're fine, but it could be the end of your world if you don't go in and you did have a heart attack.
Yeah. So let's say you start having these symptoms only when you're exerting yourself, but then they go away when you relax. And then it happens again when you're moving around again. And so, again, even if the symptoms come and go, let's say you have these symptoms and they go away and then come back a few hours later, that is just as worrisome.
Yeah. If it's new and you haven't had that ever before, then that you should treat that like a heart attack for sure.
Exactly. Because that could just mean that you have like this 90% blockage that's about to get to be 100%. So again, if you have symptoms, you sit there and relax and they go away, but then the same symptoms keep coming back and for the next few hours and stuff like that, go, you know, chew on a full aspirin or call 911 and let them give you an aspirin and get to a hospital.
So Mark, you keep mentioning aspirin. Aspirin is really a cornerstone treatment for heart attacks. Do you want to explain to folks why aspirin is so helpful in this case?
Yeah, I mean, aspirin, first of all, especially when you chew it, it gets absorbed much quicker. But aspirin is not only an anti-inflammatory, but it's an anti-thrombotic. So again, it covers two paths, the inflammation. That's why you could take aspirin when you have back pain or a headache. But it also, in heart attacks, it actually, it sort of breaks up the platelet clumping together. It's sort of an anticoagulant, which is a problem when you use aspirin. I mean, again, it has two different mechanisms, and each mechanism might be good for one thing. But again, when you're using aspirin for an anti-inflammatory, the risk factor there is that you're going to bleed because it also is an anti-thrombotic.
Right. So as Mark said earlier, a key thing with a heart attack is not just that there's plaque, but that the plaque cracked open and a clot formed on top of it. And by taking an aspirin, you're preventing platelets from contributing to that clot, and it can help break that clot up and restore blood flow to the heart.
Not to confuse people more, and again, there is something called an aortic dissection, usually in either very tall people who have some type of connective tissue problem, like Marfan's, or people with high blood pressure who are much older, over the age of 60, and they actually can get a tear or a rip in their aorta. And if you're having that's sort of a pain that goes all the way to the back also. The problem with that is aspirin could actually make it a little worse, right?
Yeah, but honestly, I think almost all those folks end up getting aspirin anyway in the ambulance if they didn't take it themselves.
That's my point. And if you're that worried, call 911 and let them decide. But in general, that would be probably 1 out of 500 people probably in that setting with chest pain. Don't you agree?
Yeah, totally. So if you think you're having a heart attack and the people in the ambulance agree that you might be having a heart attack, the very first thing that they do after checking your blood pressure and making sure that you're stable for the next few minutes is an EKG. So an EKG is a very simple test where we basically put a bunch of stickers on your chest, arms, and legs, and connect wires to them, and it measures the electrical signal coming out of the heart. And this is a very important first step, because the most severe life-threatening heart attacks will cause readily identifiable changes on that EKG. And so step one is just looking for those and seeing if you have them.
So they could diagnose it and localize which artery is blocked.
So the first thing they're going to do is look at that EKG. And if that EKG is consistent with a severe heart attack, then things are going to happen very, very fast for you.
Yeah.
They're going to basically take you.
You hope they happen fast for you.
Things in theory should happen very fast for you. But essentially, they're going to take you immediately to a procedure room, and using a sort of complicated series of wires and tubes and balloons, they are going to literally open the artery back up that closed down and put in a metal scaffolding, a metal tube called a stent, to keep that artery open and prop it open so that it doesn't close down again. And that's very important.
It's not as scary as it sounds. Chris is making it sound like they're just going to end up in the ambulance, take a knife and cut open your chest.
If they do that, you should make a phone call. That is not part of the procedure.
They'll always, when they do an EKG, either in the emergency room or an ambulance, and they could actually diagnose you're having a heart attack, besides the aspirin, they might give you some sublingual, like under your tongue, nitroglycerin, and some IV medications like beta blockers that might calm your heart. Then the idea is to get you into one of these angiogram rooms, catheterization, same thing. An angiogram is a catheterization, where they bring you in, they'll give you a little sedation, so you'll actually be awake for it, and they actually go in through usually either your wrist, your arm, or the artery on top of the on top of your leg near your groin. They give you a little numbing medication. It's like when you go to the dentist, you get a little shot there to numb the area, and that's all you should feel. The rest of it is actually not that bad, apparently. I mean, I haven't had one, thank God. Knocked three times, but my point is,
I've seen your lifestyle, Mark. I know it's coming, I'm sorry to say.
No, don't jinx me.
I hope it never does. I hope that you remain very healthy for a very long time.
Anyway, so they give you a little numbing medication, and they sort of just insert a little tube, like a big IV, and they go up to the area near your heart with the arteries, and they actually inject a little dye, and they can see if there's a blockage. And if there's a blockage, they do one of those little Roto-Rooter things. They just open it up with a balloon and then put in this little, as Chris said, scaffolding stent that stays in you. It's like getting a filling in your tooth. It's not much metal, and it opens it up, and you can be a new person.
So if, on the other hand, when they check that first EKG, it doesn't look like you're having a really severe kind of heart attack, then you're probably going to spend quite a bit of time sitting around, because the next steps at that point are checking other indicators of a potential heart attack, and those are blood tests. And they'll usually check them right when you arrive, and if they look okay, they'll keep you in the emergency room for a couple hours and check them again. Because sometimes it can take a little while for those tests to turn positive.
Yeah.
And then ultimately they'll make a decision about whether they need to take you for that procedure we just described, or whether they're just going to treat with medications, or whether they think that you didn't have a heart attack at all, in which case hopefully you're fine and you can go home.
Yeah. So let's say you're in the emergency room, you're still having your symptoms. They haven't gone away, or even if they went away, but they're trying to figure out what the symptoms are. So other things that can sort of be the same type of symptoms are, as we said, lung clot. So I'm sure they might want to do some blood tests or sometimes a CAT scan to make sure you're not having a clot that went to one of your lung arteries called pulmonary arteries, pulmonary embolus. So a lung clot can present the same way. Again, a tear in the main artery leading out of the heart called the aorta, dissection, that can cause the symptoms. You could actually have a really bad ulcer or reflux. So, you know, you have your mouth, your esophagus, your stomach. The acid in your stomach can sometimes cause such pain up your esophagus, it could actually present the same way. You could be sweaty, chest discomfort, nausea, you know, other things it could be. It could be pericarditis, which is when the outer lining of the heart, the pericardium, is inflamed. That usually happens in people a week or so after they have a regular cold. So pericarditis, when you have inflammation outside the heart, that could also present this way. Anything else, Chris, you could think of?
Lung infection, pneumonia,
yeah.
Pulled muscle in the chest, acid reflux. I mean, there's a lot of different things that can cause these symptoms. And like I said, hopefully you'll have one of those and not have a heart attack.
Yeah.
But it's always better to be safe than sorry, because you don't want to miss this.
Yeah. So I guess we'll have to have another podcast on some other related issues, like who's at risk for a heart attack, what to do after you've had a heart attack, right? So I guess that will take over another.
Well, after you've had a heart attack, you should listen to the good advice of your doctor.
Well, that's true.
But I think we actually already did talk about who's at risk. I mean, the older you get, the more at risk you are. Men are at more risk than women, for the most part.
I don't know.
That's not to say that women are not at risk, and it's a major killer of women, but average, men are at higher risk than women.
Yeah, but when people go to an emergency room and, you know, a woman, you know, is there with chest pain, they might not be taken as seriously if we tell everyone.
Well, that's not what I mean. They obviously should be.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Just because a man is slightly more likely than a woman to have a heart attack at any given age doesn't mean a woman can't have a heart attack. Yeah. Any women listening to this who have these symptoms should take them just as seriously. But we talked about risk, and being male is a risk factor.
Yeah, and people who smoke, people of high blood pressure that's not treated, people of high cholesterol who are not on a cholesterol medication, and people who have did I talk about diabetes? And people with diabetes that's not under control. So again, those are people that are at risk for actually having that big heart attack.
Other things that are relevant here are also family history. So if your parents had heart attacks, especially at a younger age in their 50s, 40s, 30s, then you're at much higher risk. Some autoimmune diseases can increase your risk. A lot of different things, but better safe than sorry. No matter who you are, if you have symptoms and you're concerned, get them checked out right away.
Yep.
So in answer to our final question, Mark, I think we made exactly zero jokes about heart attacks.
Well, unfortunately, it's not that, it's not much to laugh about. But the other thing is we should say before we leave is, when's the most common time for people to have heart attacks?
All right, because it's not really when you're eating the steak. It's funny, an acute stress and Monday mornings, driving in traffic is the number one time to have a heart attack, Monday morning in traffic. And it's interesting, they've shown actually during major like FIFA games or athletic events or other sort of life stressors, that's when people have the heart attack. Christmas is another big one.
Christmas Eve at like 4 p.m. Anyway, the other time of day that I always remember from my training is like 6 in the morning. Like, that's why people wake up with this chest heaviness, because at 6 or 7 in the morning, your natural cortisol levels are at its highest also, right?
That's why I always set my alarm for 7:30. I sleep through it.
So you sleep through it. Anyway, thanks for joining us today. Check out our book, Am I Dying? A Complete Guide to Your Symptoms and What to Do Next. And feel free to give us a review on the podcast.
If you like the show, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social, and tell all your friends to listen. Am I Dying is a production of Offscript Media. Our executive producer is Matthew Zachary. Andrew McDowell is our senior producer. Karen Lee is our production manager. Darren Tun is our production intern. Am I Dying is recorded, mixed, and edited by Ariel Nachman. For advertising and media inquiries, email media@offscript.com. Hit us up at contact@offscript.com to share comments and feedback. For more information, visit offscript.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.